Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The City of Tulsa and NCOG are embarking on a mobility innovation strategy for the city, or smart mobility. Well, what does that mean, actually? Well, it involves coming up with accommodations and changes to our transportation infrastructure to support and encourage a wide range of ways to get around the city, in addition to the traditional automobile. Today, attention seems to focus on autonomous vehicles or connected vehicles, but it's far more than that. Ride sharing, transit on demand, Uber or Lyft, bikes and scooter shares, real-time information on traffic and congestion, as well as traffic signals that anticipate traffic patterns so you don't have to stop, and a lot more. The idea is to improve safety for commuters and pedestrians, improve traffic management, and there's less wasted time and emissions in getting around the city. My guest today is a leading transportation researcher and practitioner, Kelly Coyner, who has experience in running transportation systems like the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission, government experience at the Department of Transportation, and research experience at MIT and Harvard. She's currently the mobility innovation leader at Stantec, a design and consulting firm that's the lead consultant for the City of Tulsa and NCOG. There'll be a public presentation and project update on the strategy tomorrow afternoon at 4:30, Thursday afternoon, at Marshall Brewing at 1742 East 6th Street. And Kelly Coyner joins me today by phone to talk about smart mobility. Kelly Coyner, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Rich, I'm really glad to be here. Thanks.
So, as the lead consultant for helping the City of Tulsa and NCOG design a smart mobility strategy, I think maybe the starting point is, what is smart mobility?
Smart mobility really encompasses a range of things, but it's about how do we use technologies and planning tools and policies to bring the best mobility environment, the mobility service to a full community. And it's sometimes people think of it as it's just sort of the newfangled driverless cars, but it's a lot more than that. It's about using a set of technologies, usually data-driven, automated, connected, and electric, and it's also about the ways in which you use them to increase the amount of shared mobility, which is not just your bus ride, but it might be your car share. And then it's about the values that you want to realize through those.
So beyond just the normal way people think about smart mobility, which is the connected vehicle, the autonomous vehicle, there's this whole range of benefits, safety issues, less traffic congestion, more ways to get people around a city or a downtown that doesn't involve a single passenger car. So it's all these things, right?
Right. I mean, it's not something that's unfamiliar to people who live in Tulsa. I mean, you've got scooters,
yeah,
and you've got bike share, and you've got buses, and you have Enterprise, which has really been a leader in shared vehicle usage, and you have Lyft, and you have Uber. Those are all the things that you can see, you can put your hands on, and you can take a ride on.
Wouldn't a smart mobility strategy do more to help those various transportation modes grow and to be more accessible to more people?
When I'm working with a community and when we started talking to Tulsa, my question was, what do you want to achieve through doing this mobility strategy? And they always start with, you know, we want more efficient transportation and the like, but when you really press on it, I think that the common thread is that they want to see increased economic opportunity, which means economic development and being able to get people to work and to the things that they need to do. They typically want to have an environmental kind of goal. Maybe it's through electrification, or maybe it's by having less congestion. And then equity is the other one. And equity means getting mobility services to people who don't have it, but it also means getting people to where they need to go who don't drive or can't drive. And in particular, I would just say I often ask if I'm in a, and I can't do this obviously on the radio because I can't say, stand up every listener and tell me why you care about this. But when I ask that question, I usually get two answers, particularly when it comes to driverless or increasing the amount of transit. Someone has a child that can work but can't drive. They might be blind. They might have autism or be on the autism spectrum. Or they have an older parent, or they know they're getting older themselves, and they want to be able to get around. So, you know, the three E's, I like to say, are key. And then we can talk some more about sort of what the opportunities are in terms of improving transportation, because those are not things that we have to wait a long time to see with smart mobility. Those are solutions that Tulsa's looking at right now, and that's really what this sort of study is that we're working with NCOG and the city on.
So equity and access to transportation is really what most citizens would say they want. Let's talk about some of the benefits of smart mobility. Safety issues is one of the biggest, reducing auto fatalities. Because I think when people think of autonomous vehicles or connected vehicles, they really think of them on city streets, within the downtown area, maybe last mile commuting, that sort of thing. But, you know, for so many users of the transportation system, it's on a car, on an expressway. And there are important issues of safety that a smart mobility policy and a smartly designed policy can do to reduce traffic congestion and reduce auto fatalities and help with safety issues.
A lot of times people ask me sort of like, why do you care about autonomous vehicles? What would you like to see? And my answer is that as someone who's worked on safety issues for decades, I'm tired of trying to fix human beings. I want better answers. And that if we can use the tools of autonomy to make us safer, even safer drivers, never mind when we're not driving. And so the safety benefits are, you know, sort of estimated at being that if we could move to some level of automation very, very quickly, we would realize huge gains in reducing the number of fatalities. But the thing I find really fascinating is that the interaction between automation and connected technology. So you talked about, you know, this whole set of issues about congestion on the roadway, or how do we have better safety on the roadway. And we don't have to get to a place where we have a Jetson-like vehicle. What we want to think about, though, is what is the kind of data that comes even before you have an accident, and how it can help us prevent accidents, and then how these technologies help protect pedestrians crossing the street, how they, you know, monitor and level out the levels of speed. When you talked about platooning, you know, the same technologies that we use for platooning also can help people keep in their lane. We call that lane keeping, which I always find sort of a funny term. But there's lane keeping, there's automatic braking, there are driver assist systems. And all of those tools work better when they're connected to the infrastructure. And so we have sort of fancy terminology. We call it V2I, V2V, and V2X. And so that's, you know, vehicle-to-vehicle connectivity, so that the vehicles are talking to each other. That's typical of the platooning kind of scenario. V2I is the vehicle talking to the infrastructure. So it might be buses and cars interacting with the traffic signals so that traffic signals reset automatically, or they give priority to buses, for example. And then my favorite is sort of V2X, and that is all the different ways that we can help other, you know, we can help people and things move better and more safely. So think about a person who's blind in a crosswalk. How do they know a car is there? The V2X application lets the car talk to the pedestrian through their cell phone and might even interact with the traffic light. And these are not sort of fantastical kinds of, you know, futuristic things. These are things that we're we're seeing now.
And you're seeing a lot of, I'm going to just throw out one intersection, right around 11th and Lewis, you have this new commercial development that is foot-oriented, pedestrian-oriented. There are new pedestrian signals that automatically, rather than putting a traffic signal in there, it lights up when there is a pedestrian ready to cross a busy thoroughfare, Lewis Avenue in this case. Now, the next step would be to get that connected to the whole infrastructure, which would talk to the signals just a block or so away. And all of a sudden, you have a better experience and safety for the pedestrian, but also for traffic flow patterns as well. Isn't that the case? Isn't that sort of what you're looking at with smart mobility?
Yep, you have that with smart mobility, and we're really beginning to understand what the promise is of the connected infrastructure, but it allows us to analyze what's going on and make changes. It also allows for real-time operational changes and managing congestion or reroutes. And it's also, and this is one of the things I find really interesting, is that we're all sitting with computers in our pockets, which is how Waze works with your cell phone. If we are able to put in sensors and have them picked up by a common infrastructure, there are all sorts of different inputs that we might put in. It might be better weather management. When you're in an environment in Oklahoma that has a lot of microclimates that can be absolutely cataclysmic if you don't have early warning, right? And so that infrastructure can be a lot about not only how you manage the regular traffic flow, but how do you manage evacuation, for example? It's just lots of sort of interesting things. And I think the component that I think is really important is that when we talk about smart mobility, it's not one thing, but it's the combination of all of those opportunities that sort of bring it together to realize the promise of making the system work better, make it safer, and make it more accessible.
And also environmentally friendly, too, because, when you're looking at traffic congestion, so much of our system now, it involves, if you're on arterial streets and you come to a light, when you come to that light, there are systems in place that lets the signal know that, hey, I'm waiting. If there's not traffic the other direction, eventually the light changes. The promise of smart mobility is knowing that you're approaching that and there's no traffic on the other way. So it automatically turns the light green so you don't have to stop. I mean, it's little things like that.
I also think about how much more pleasant the drive is right now if you're not sitting at a red light when there's no reason to sit at a red light and you're eager to get home because you either want to go out or you want to make it to your kid's soccer game or to pick someone up from daycare, right? It's the convenience factor is hugely important. And I think that the interesting thing about smart mobility is that smart mobility is also about the quality of life that we have, and the quality of life also has implications for how Tulsa, and I think this is something that Tulsa's leadership really understands, is that having lots of different choices about transportation and having, things that may be essentials to one and amenities to another can both be met at the same time. Being able, to get from here to there matters in terms of sort of how do you attract people. I have spent a lot of time in the transit industry, and a lot of times we focus on only people who don't have cars and how they want to get to and from. And the big thing I think that misses is that transit and shared mobility means business. It means that people can get to economic opportunity, that workers can get to the places that they need to be, and that you can attract the kinds of business that you want. And then on the more advanced levels of the kinds of looking at autonomy and the like, Tulsa has a really rich opportunity in terms of its university community and its research community as well to really be leaders in how do we apply this technology. So it's I love Tulsa. Just, you know, it's an interesting place in that a few years ago I wouldn't have said, oh yeah, Tulsa would be the place as a leader in smart mobility. And now I realize that it's at the top of the list. I mean, and that's not just my opinion. You know, that's when people like Enrix have looked at the city and said, you know, who's most amenable, who would benefit the most from this whole range of smart technologies. Tulsa is 10th in the country of all cities as being, you know, the place that would really benefit from these kinds of technologies.
Well, we don't have a lot of existing transit, mass transit infrastructure that sort of keeps you from embracing the next wave. You know, mm-hmm. We're just now getting started on bus rapid transit, the Aero system. So, I mean, in that sense, we're ripe for the next wave because you don't have all this baggage with the old, you know, the old infrastructure, the 20th century infrastructure that's at least for mass transit, that mass transit part of the puzzle, and the equity of getting everybody accessibility to transportation involved. Let's focus on that in just a moment. My guest today is Kelly Coyner. She's a leading transportation researcher and practitioner. She is the mobility innovation leader at Stantec, which is the lead consultant for helping the City of Tulsa and NCOG design a smart mobility strategy. And that mobility innovation strategy will have a public presentation Thursday at Marshall Brewing. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, the city is investing in bus rapid transit, the Aero system. How will a smart mobility strategy enhance that, or will it alleviate some of the need to build up bus rapid transit? I don't know the answer to the question. How do you see a smart mobility strategy working with this emerging bus rapid transit in the city?
So I've worked with a lot of cities on how they look at smart mobility, and I often get the question, should we do more of an investment in our high-capacity transit is sort of the term that we use for thinking about rail systems or bus rapid transit. Should I maybe focus on van pools? Should I look at micro transit, you know, sort of smaller buses that are on demand, or should I do AVs? And my answer is yes. And the reason is that it's a system and it's a continuum. And when it comes to bus rapid transit, the study is really asking the question, how can we make bus rapid transit a spine for moving a lot of people effectively and efficiently? And one of the really key questions is, where should it run so that it serves the people that it needs to serve in Tulsa? And so that's, you know, that's a key piece of the study that that we're working on with the city and NCOG. And we have the transit component of it. We're looking at what the land use kinds of questions are. How do we best serve the, you know, new communities, making sure that there's enough housing for a range of people? How do we connect people within the city and take advantage of other pieces that there are. I like to think that transportation is just a tool for achieving these other objectives, and we don't look at them differently. And in Tulsa, not only have they looked at how do they build out sensible transit, but this study is also looking at economic development opportunities. They're looking at what's the sort of connected vehicle piece of it. We've talked a lot about the autonomous vehicles and those technologies. But there's also a focus on the environmental piece, not only from the standpoint of reducing the number of cars traveling or the congestion, but also promoting electrification of transportation, which is something that's not just about, you know, someone in their personal vehicle, but also in trucking and in freight.
Right. I want to ask you, I know you're a Texan by birth and a native Texan, and I'm an Oklahoman. And I'm wondering, you know, both of our states sort of live and die on the price of oil and gasoline. If you were approaching this a decade ago, I think people would say, yes, this is absolutely going to have to happen and will happen simply because of the price of energy at that particular point. Now we're in a scenario here a decade or a little over a decade later, and the price of gasoline is stable. It's not tremendously high compared to what it was a decade ago. Does the price of gasoline have any effect on the average commuter, the average person's, and their willingness to embrace like electric vehicles or a more connected vehicle that, or an autonomous vehicle that they may be using as a single passenger vehicle?
Yes. you know, we're both from these states that, you know, have long been really grounded in the oil and gas economy. We're also, I know from traveling in Texas recently and going out, you know, west to the Permian Basin, there is as many wind turbines as there are.
That's true.
Barracks, right?
Right.
And so in Texas, I believe this is accurate, that there's more electricity generated by wind turbines and solar now than there is by oil and gas. And I think that, you know, I think that we're, just because we're in the oil patch doesn't mean that we don't understand the implications of the diversification of the economy and of being, you know, right now we're going to probably be looking at a run-up in the price of gas and, you know, of petroleum products, of gasoline in particular, and that we've long been not wanting to be vulnerable to that. But I think your question is a little bit different, and I think that's why the shared component of this is a really important one to notice. And the first piece of it is that everywhere, even in places like Tulsa and Dallas and Houston, there's an understanding that the sharing economy is a thing, that what we're likely to see in terms of the uptake of electric and connected and automated vehicles, particularly automated ones that are very much still very expensive, is that the real value is in shared transportation. So, you know, and what is shared transportation? Well, it's transit, but it's also Zipcar, and it's also shared bikes and it's shared scooters, and it's Uber and it's Lyft. And those ownership models and those operational models are probably as important a change in the way we think about mobility and an opportunity for mobility as these newfangled technologies are, that, you know, or as we sort of think about it. And it's, you know, it was really, when I shifted to really doing a lot more work in automation, I was stunned to come to a place where they were talking about, when investors were saying, well, we want to be able to keep people from driving their cars to a business park, but we've got to have a way that we can move people around once they get there. And I was like, I grew up in Texas. You know, I rode in a huge old Chevrolet Impala up from Houston there. And in the case of Tulsa, you know, it's really striking to me that when I've been speaking about sort of what all of this smart mobility means, I almost always get a question of, so, well, tell me about a place that really loves their cars and are really dependent on their cars where you're working on this. And I always talk about Tulsa.
Yeah, right.
And I want to sort of give you sort of an interesting kind of, it's kind of a fun fact, I think. So AAA, my first big car trip from Texas, I learned to read a map using triptychs from AAA.
Right.
And AAA is, you know, built around the automobile. Well, AAA is rethinking what its business model is, and the big issue for them is that their average age of their member is 65, the most rapidly declining level of people with car ownership. So, you know, Texas is not exempt from that, and neither is Oklahoma.
No.
And so what they're doing is looking at all these smart mobility technologies and how do they make sure that the consumer that used to be a driver is served by those sort of technologies. And I really think that's what the city is doing. They're you substitute in the word citizen instead of consumer.
Right. And it's a process in which fewer of us will be drivers, and more of us will be riders in some form or another.
Right. You know, one of the sort of fun things is to think about, you know, what are the other things you could do if you didn't have to drive? And, you know, so I like people asking the question, you know, sort of what would you like your driverless car to look like? And I always say to them, I said, well, don't think of it as a driverless car. Maybe it's just that it's your coffee shop on wheels, or, you know, or the place that you're going to have a party, or, you know, your kids can run around and you don't have to be worrying about telling them to sit down and put their, you know, put their seatbelts back on, that they can, you know, sort of have fun and move along. Or maybe it's even, you know, a mobile apartment that gets you from Tulsa to L.A. But we really need to reimagine this. And you know, just, I know I'm being unrelentingly Texan, but there's nothing that is automatic, if you will, about the way this technology plays out. I have a photo of an electric vehicle from the 1890s that was in San Antonio on a unpaved street. And there's a distributorship for them in the background that also sells carriages and everything you need for your horse. And then we had this huge change in Texas and Oklahoma were huge beneficiaries of the interstate highway system. We wouldn't have imagined that when we had the internal combustion engine. And now we sort of have a whole new opportunity to rethink how we move and what it means, you know, in terms of safety and in terms of the environment, in terms of people who, you know, can't drive or don't own a car can get to the places that they need to get to.
Kelly Coyner, I appreciate your time today. We look forward to hearing all about it this week. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me today. I appreciate it, Rich.
Kelly Coyner is a transportation researcher and practitioner. She's the mobility innovation leader at Stantec and lead consultant for helping the city and NCOG design a smart mobility strategy. There'll be an update and public presentation about the strategy tomorrow afternoon at 4:30 at Marshall Brewing at 1742 East 6th Street. For details on the event, visit cityoftulsa.org/mobilityplan. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.